Welcome, great patriotic friends, to October 20th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and one of the reasons why I do this show is because you know how other countries tend to view Americans as boisterous, obnoxious, and overbearing? Guess what? I'm one of the worst ones. I assembled this podcast in a tool shed in my backyard in La Mesa, California, right next to America's finest city, San Diego. If you're looking to move to the area, or if you have any questions about real estate, check out TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. Because as a full-service Encinitas and San Diego real estate professional, Teresa works with buyers, sellers, and investors in real estate transactions. So check it out, TeresaLovesRealEstate.com. And now let's begin the show as we customarily do with the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags if we have one, put our right hands over our hearts, and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right. And now moving on to today's headlines. We'll wish a happy anniversary to President Benjamin and First Lady Carrie Harrison, plus World War II, Operation Musketeers, and the Cold War, Congress investigates Reds in Hollywood. All right, so now let's do this. 1853. Happy birthday, President Benjamin and First Lady Carrie Harrison. Carrie is known as one of the best housekeepers in White House history. How's that for chauvinistic? Caroline Levi Scott was born in Oxford, Ohio, on October 1st, 1832, to Presbyterian minister and science teacher John Scott and Mary Potts Neal Scott. As a child, she learned how to paint, which would become very useful later on in life while designing the White House china. And I'll get into that in a moment. She met her husband, Benjamin Kid Gloves Harrison, in class at the University of Miami, Ohio, and he could not resist her vivaciousness. They tied the knot on this day in 1853 as Kid Gloves started getting his law career off the ground. But Kid Gloves Harrison was nicknamed the Human Iceberg for a reason. He was frosty and had a very wimpy handshake, which is something that most men hate. When the Civil War broke out, Benjamin enlisted as an officer due to his education and became promoted to Brigadier General. Now he started to make some real coin. He also got into politics, which wasn't that hard considering his grandfather, William Henry, was already president of the U.S. In 1888, the Human Iceberg won the election from Grover Cleveland in a contested electoral college result. For that, the Human Iceberg would earn another nickname, Grandfather's Hat. Notwithstanding, Grandfather's Hat Harrison's lovely First Lady would move into the White House and seriously shake things up. They only had three children, Russell Lord, Mary Scott, and an unnamed stillborn. Yet the White House seemed to be full of the Harrison family, Mary and her husband, another in-law, and several grandchildren. The White House at the time was not equipped for this. First of all, would you believe that there was only one bathroom? Yeah, major renovations were required. Thomas Edison and his group of buddies showed up at the White House and took 2 days to check it out and see how they could get electrical wiring installed. But the building was a tinderbox and could not handle the upgrade. The kitchen hadn't been updated in over 30 years. In the attic and cellar, there was rot and rats. Kerry wanted the whole house to be demolished with a new one in its place, but Congress decided on a major upgrade instead. The other thing that Carrie noticed in the attic were the fine china that belonged to some of the past presidents. She took on the huge job of categorizing the china and then painting pictures to show what kind of china the White House should actually have. Complete with the United States coats of arms bordered by corn and goldenrod to symbolize America's wealth and beauty. You can see this prominently on display if you take a tourist visit. Although Carrie wasn't known as a feminist, during her husband's administration, she served as fundraiser and support for Johns Hopkins Medical School and ran the Daughters of American Revolution, though she, of course, was much too young to be an actual daughter of a war that took place 100 years prior. Tragically, Carrie developed a nasty case of tuberculosis and became the second First Lady after Lucretia Tyler to die in the White House. 1944, Operation Musketeers 1, 2, and 3. Douglas MacArthur and Chester Nimitz v. Amayuki Yamashita and Soemo Toyota. The result?
decisive Allied victory, deposed Second Philippine Republic, and liberation of the Philippines. After the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, it invaded and overwhelmed the Philippine Islands. Douglas MacArthur was the U.S. military advisor there and was ordered by President Franklin D. Roosevelt to evacuate the islands in March 1942, leaving behind 90,000 American troops that would surrender to the Japanese military. But MacArthur swore that he would return. And he was a little bit late, but he kept his promise. In mid-1944, Nimitz captured several strategic islands in the Pacific, and MacArthur, now the Supreme Commander of the Southwest Pacific Theater of Operations, had taken New Guinea and the Admiralty Islands and had his eye on the Philippines. The Filipinos, who was hoping the U.S. would return their country and therefore independence back to them, tried their best guerrilla warfare against the Japanese. Australia offered assistance, but wanted more control over military operations. MacArthur never reached a deal with the Australian cabinet, therefore Australia had minimal involvement in the campaigns. On October 20, 1944, the U.S. 6th Army, supported by naval and air attacks, arrived at the Philippine Islands
of late.
MacArthur announced on the radio broadcast, "People of the Philippines, I have returned." In January 1945, MacArthur and his forces took back Luzon, the Bataan, the Corregidor, and finally, in March, the Philippine capital of Manila. The Japanese would surrender on August 15, 1945. General Douglas MacArthur, everybody, like a boss! And going from MacArthur to McCarthy, 1947. Congress investigates Reds in Hollywood. 300 actors and writers were suspected of being communists and were blacklisted from Hollywood. This was known as the Red Scare, and studio heads and other industry professionals not on the list drawn up by the House Committee on Un-American Activities were asked if they had worked with someone named on the blacklist. Some witnesses, including director Elijah Clazan, actors Gary Cooper and Robert Taylor, and studio greats Walt Disney and Jack Warner, were able to release names of colleagues they suspected of being communists. Schmoop.com lists the invasion of the body snatchers as a perfect example of how the Red Scare affected Hollywood in the 1950s. It was about alien invaders secretly occupying human bodies and turning them into soulless pod people. But enough about my ex-girlfriend. In the Body Snatchers movie, the hero looks to the camera and screams, "Look, you fools! You're in danger! Can't you see? They're after you! They're after all of us! Our wives, our children! They're here already! You're next!" That's awesome.
And so that, scholars, is going to wrap it up for October 20th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I'm your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com. Let me know what you thought about today's ep. For instance, World War II buffs, what's your take on Operation Musketeers? And what down and late? Anything you care to add to that story? By the way, folks, I would ask that you fact-check me. If you hear anything that doesn't sound right to you, let me know, please. Have you ever seen the Body Snatchers movies? Since it is after all that time of year, what's your take on the Red Scare? Or what about the death of Michael Jackson? Is Dr. Murray innocent or guilty in your opinion? So yeah, let me know. You can also check out some of the multiple choice quizzes while you're on the website. Good luck with those. I made it myself. And be sure to check out tomorrow's episode. I'll talk about President Harding, the Battle of Ball's Bluff, the Red Sox beat the Yankees, and Smokey the Bear. So don't miss that. In the meantime, you can catch me on Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter handle, by the way, is at JDUSHL. It stands for Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. So until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. See you tomorrow.